Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm happy to be joined today by Greg Salkovich. After a career as a top-performing salesperson for three different companies, Greg co-founded a sales recruitment agency to combine the two things he loves most in business, sales and helping other people. In only 6 years, Greg grew his company organically with no outside funding to 60 employees. They reached the Inc. 5000 for fastest growing companies three consecutive years. Greg then launched a separate recruiting company, Right Choice Resources, which specifically focuses on the placement of salespeople, executives, marketing, account management, and customer success. Greg, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you having me.
Awesome. So you were referred by our mutual friend, Alan Fisher. What an awesome guy.
He's an awesome guy.
Yeah, he's been on the show before, and I've met him in person actually as well at the Pinnacle Conference in San Diego. So if folks haven't heard that episode, it was called How to Build $1 Million for 10 Straight Years and Grow a Successful Team. A really interesting interview, really interesting guy. So I'm really glad that Alan connected us. So shout out to Alan.
Yes, shout out to Alan. Yeah, he's amazing. A big fan.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan too. So I'm going to start with one of the key questions I always ask to begin with, Greg, is how did you get into recruiting?
Yeah, so I was a top performer, as you mentioned earlier, in sales for many years, and just was always very passionate about sales. I was reading sales books and learning the new techniques. And then I was actually laid off, took a software sales job, and it just wasn't the right opportunity for me. I could never figure out what my commissions were. I get a paycheck. It was like scratching a lottery ticket. I didn't know if it was going to be $500 or $5,000. And, decided that I knew that I made $1,000 per referral, any candidate that I referred in. So I just kept making money on referrals. And then I thought, you know what? I think I can make a living off doing this. I really like connecting people. I like helping people. I know that I get $1,000 for every employee I refer in. And that's where it started. And then on top of that, at that company, there was a recruiter that they used who was placing people into the company and also taking them out at the same time.
Oh, so that's
recruiting people. Yeah.
That's the absolute like golden rule of recruiting is you don't recruit from your own clients, right? I think
exactly.
That's horrific. That's the kind of behavior that gives our industry a bad name for sure.
I know. So that's how it all started. Is I loved putting things together. I loved helping people. I loved the aspects of recruiting. I combined it with sales, and then I saw this recruiter who did something that I thought was very unethical. And like you said, some recruiters just don't have a strong reputation. I saw a need to do it and go into sales recruiting and do it the right way.
I've never heard that story before, Greg. I ask almost everyone that question, and it's funny that you actually were recruiting people internally. It wasn't your actual job, but there was a referral fee, and so you just started naturally learning how to recruit people.
Exactly. I mean, I knew how to use LinkedIn because I was prospecting using LinkedIn, so that's how I understood Boolean searches and things like that. And then I just network a lot, so I was referring people in. I was reaching out to people cold, and I love doing it. So I quit the job and. There's a guy that I knew who had a one-person sales consulting company, and I said, let's do this. And I literally quit my job with no job, and we agreed to work together for 90 days. We signed a 90-day contract together, and then I just really prayed that it worked out, and I liked it because I had no income coming in. I was on 100% commission.
Amazing. And, well, I'd love to hear what happened next, but first, can we just back up a second? Because you skimmed over something that caught my attention was the being laid off. Could you elaborate on that? If you feel it's relevant or to your journey, then I'd love to understand more about that.
It is relevant to my journey because it got me into recruiting. And also, I think when I speak to candidates, and we're seeing more layoffs right now, I have major empathy for them because it's not just like I've sold like you. I've stood at trade shows for 5 hours like you. I've been laid off like you. And that really helps me, in my opinion, become a better recruiter because I've actually lived it. I give the analogy, it's like being can you be a good basketball coach if you've never picked up a basketball before? I mean, sure, but I think it's easier if you have.
Yeah, absolutely. Good analogy.
Yeah. So yeah, with the layoff, I was at a company for 4 years. It was going great. Loved the company. And my boss, who I'm very close to this day, I mean, it's been almost 15 years since I reported to him. We keep in touch regularly. Everything was going great. And then just completely blindsided by a layoff. They signed into my computer one day. I was a top performer. And they just completely shut everything off. Couldn't get access into my computer. He called me. He said, I was laid off. I'm sure you're next. Company's about to sell. And they let us out. They let a bunch of us go. And it was shocking. It was really, really tough to go into interviews and say, hey, Mark, I'm a top performer. And they just let me go. And, you know, the hiring managers say, that's not true. That's why would they let you go if you're a top performer? And it was really challenging. So I had to overcome it by saying, you can call anybody in the company with my permission and you can ask them and they will tell you that. So I said, I give you full authority. And it was tough. And then I got a letter in the mail. I was hoping it was a severance check. Instead, it was a lawsuit letter. A letter from their legal team saying, you cannot compete with us. You can't go into the same business. So that's partially how I got into recruiting, is I couldn't work in the business that I had experience in. And I had to figure something else out to do. It was a blessing in disguise. It was probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
I was going to, like, well, absolutely. I was thinking the same thing, which is that I'm sure it was a horrible experience and really battering to, you know, your ego, but also just, you know, scary, like in terms of just from a financial security point of view and everything. It must have just been a terrible experience. And yet, if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't have then gone on to build that company and to be doing what you're doing today.
I mean, I'd be selling boxes and bubble wrap to this day. I mean, that was what my background
is. That what it was?
That's what it was. Yeah. I still look. It's been a while, but I still, whenever I go at the store, I always have to check it out because that was what my experience was. So I loved the job. I loved the company. I loved my boss, and it was just a completely blindsided layoff. And I had just bought a condo in downtown Chicago. I had just got a new car. So it was stressful, but you figure it out.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. And that's why the show is called The Resilient Recruiter, because it is about those, you know, setbacks, which, you know, we need to be able to bounce back from, especially in recruiting. I mean, I think everybody to get on in life, you know, you need resilience, but, you know, boy, this is a hard job, right? There's so many setbacks, disappointments, you know, that if you don't have, I recently interviewed Greg Savage. I don't know if you know who that is. He's Australian recruitment guru, really, really great guy. And he called it bounce back ability. And if you don't have that bounce back ability, then you're probably not going to have a long career in recruiting.
I agree with you. And I got lucky because I came from a sales background. So you have to have the same resiliency. Your income can be all over the place. You get sometimes tough customers. You get close to a deal, you don't get it. I mean, so sales also taught me resiliency.
Oh, for sure. Like sales, there's, I think coming from a sales background gives you a head start in recruiting for sure. And we're going to talk more about that because I know that you've got a lot of great examples and techniques that you've applied from your sales career that have crossed over into recruiting. I do think that, I don't know if you might disagree, but I think recruiting is another level of, you know, resilience required, in the sense that, like, all salespeople need thick skin. They need to be resilient. But if you're selling boxes and bubble wrap and you do close the deal, the boxes and bubble wrap are getting shipped, right? It's not like the boxes and bubble wrap can pull out of the deal, right? That's not going to happen. Because you've got two parties, you're brokering a deal between two different stakeholders. It's that much more complex. There's more variables, more things that can go wrong. And you're not selling a product. You're dealing with human beings who, you know, are complex. And people may say one thing and do another, or they may change their mind, or, you know, so I think that does add another dimension to it. But
I agree with you. Yeah, it is, because it's like you said, with human beings, just things can change. In my opinion, with every deal, we have two customers. We have the client and we have the candidate, and they're both just as important as each other. So yeah, it is tough. And obviously, when I was selling packaging products, you sell a deal and you close it and you have this residual income coming in. You know, the warehouse is shipping and I'm not shipping it. And with recruiting, you fill the spot and then it's on to the next position that you have to work on.
So I'd love to hear. So you took this leap of faith. You co-founded this business. You gave it 90 days. You like told yourself, okay, I'm going to try this for 90 days and see if I like it and see if we can make something happen. So what happened in that first 90 days?
Yeah. So I was talking to this gentleman who had a one person sales consulting company. We got to know each other and I told him, I said, I really think we can make this work. And he said, why would you go into sales recruiting? You know nothing about recruiting. And I said, well, I know about prospecting. I know about using Boolean searches. I know about sales. I can speak to people. I think I can recognize good sales talent because I've been a top performer. And I think we should do this. And he actually suggested I don't. He said, I think it's risky for you. You haven't done it. And one day, I don't know what it was. I got up the courage and I just went into my boss. It was not planned. At my job, and I said, I don't think this job is what I'm looking for. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm going to resign. So I called this gentleman, and I told him, and I said, let's go into business. Let's do it today. And he goes, does it have to be today? And I go, well, I just quit. So I said, I'm on the streets of Chicago with a box of my stuff, and we just made it work. And I said, so I literally walked over to his office with a box of my desk stuff, and we started that day.
That's hilarious. And so How did things progress from there? Because like it's one thing to be an individual contributor and a make placements, win clients, fill jobs, but you scaled to 60 people in 6 years, which is very rapid growth. Like that trajectory is and with no investment, like that's pretty insane. Like could you talk a little bit about that? And you like to be Inc. 5000 and all that. Like talk me through that journey and the key milestones there, because that's unusual.
Yeah, it was really a great run. I mean, we were two guys pretty much, you know, in this like tiny, tiny office trying to figure it out without a lot of experience. So it was just the two of us for a little while. And then he said, you know what, let's hire one more. I hired one of my good friends with no recruiting experience because I thought she had all the characteristics that I wanted in somebody. And she did great. And then it was just one at a time. And then what was happening is as we were hiring salespeople, some companies said, you know, we have great salespeople, but one of the challenges, we don't have a manager. We don't know how to manage them and hold them accountable and hold them to the metrics and so on. So then what we ended up doing is we ended up creating an outsourced appointment setting division. So we did that. And I actually was also hiring internally for my company as I was hiring externally for clients. And then after that, you know, we hired a bunch of those individuals. So they were appointment setters within our company that were setting appointments for other clients. And then some of these companies said, well, we need sales consultants too. We need to be taught what to do. And then we started a sales consulting division. So it was a mix between all three of those things. And it just gradually grew. So it was really fun. I mean, it was fun being two guys. I didn't even have a phone. I was like talking through my computer and making phone calls through it to having a 60 person office. It was really great.
Wow. So let me just try and understand this. So first of all, you mentioned something in passing, which I wanted to dig into, which is you hired a friend. She had no recruiting experience, but you felt she had the right characteristics to be successful. What were those characteristics that stood out to you?
I mean, first of all, it was trust. I've known her since I was a kid. I mean, we grew up on the same street, so I think trust, incredibly, incredibly organized, very good on the phone, very trustworthy, honest. She's not this slick salesperson. She's just, you talk to her and she builds instant credibility, incredible work ethic, very smart, process oriented. So when she does a search, she's very much, I'm going to do this first, I'm going to do the second, I'm going to do the third. So very methodical. Yeah. And she was amazing. I mean, she's one of my closest friends to this day. We talk all the time.
That's so cool. Awesome. Yeah, it's interesting. Thanks for sharing that. And then, so if I understand correctly, there was three divisions in the company. There was the sales recruiting, then sales consulting, which is that, did that involve training or like?
It involves training, correct.
Yeah, so training sales teams. And then the outsourced appointment setting as well. So interesting, fantastic. And then, but still, like, I'm still trying to grasp growing to 60 people in such a short space of time, like how much of your time were you still making placements or did you then just focus on managing other people making placements?
I did everything. Yeah, I was doing sales. I was doing mean, I was driving new clients for all three divisions. I was making placements for clients. I was bringing people into the company to set appointments. I mean, I was selling consulting deals. I was doing everything. And it was a lot of hours for 6 years. Managing the recruiters, onboarding, I mean, hiring, training, managing all the recruiters. So it was a lot.
I mean, how many hours were you putting in? Because that sounds like three full-time jobs.
Oh, like 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Literally.
Yeah, no, I wasn't sleeping. I'd go into the office at 7 a.m. I'd leave at midnight. And I'd do it every day. So yeah, it was a lot.
I mean, would you do that way again, or was it worth it, or like what? Because that sounds like the road to burnout in some ways, Greg. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Would I do it again? Yes, I would. I would say I would do it again. So I wouldn't have changed it. At the time, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, we were trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know better. I was trying to figure out. So, you know, would I recommend it for somebody else? No, because I completely agree with you. It's a road to burnout.
It's interesting. Well, I mean, it's still quite an achievement for sure.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So then you went on to start your current business. And obviously, that's what we'll spend the majority of the time talking about today, because that's the, you know, that's your current passion and what you're focused on at the moment. So, like, what year did you found this business, Greg?
So it was 6 years ago. So it was 2017.
Okay, awesome. So 2017. And what do you feel have been some of the, you know, the keys to your success? I know when you and I have spoken previously, there's a lot of the early experience and training that you had in sales that you've found very applicable to recruiting. But could you just expand on why you feel that you've been successful doing what you're doing?
I believe a lot of it has to do with the sales background and just being able to apply those principles and always trying to help people. That's one thing that I really pride myself on. So a lot of the candidates that we get are through referrals. A lot of the clients we get are through referrals. I mean, I haven't cold called in over 10 years because it's just taking care of people. I mean, just the other day it was just this morning. I referred somebody, I saw somebody post on LinkedIn and they want to hire a sales manager. I referred one of my friends that I know and he's great. And I said, I'm not looking for recruiting fees. So I think a lot of it has to do with that. It's like, I'm always looking to help. I'm not just in it to make money. Obviously it's nice to make money and you have to pay your bills. But I think a lot of that has to do with it. I mean, another quick story that I'll tell you is I had one guy who had a really hard time with his company, and it was a kind of like a bad divorce from his company. And we knew each other through networking. I helped him find a job. It was a COO job. I made nothing out of it. I made a call to a contact. I said, I have this phenomenal guy. I said, I'm not looking for any type of fees. I mean, keep in mind, this would probably be a $50,000 placement. So it would have been big. And I referred him in. They hired him. I got nothing out of it. I mean, he's now hired us for three different companies. So I think just by always doing right, I didn't do it in hopes of getting something out of it, but I just, you know, you do the right thing and you try to help people. That's what happens, in my opinion. And then just as far as like hiring people, I've never hired based on resumes. I've always hired people who I know, who I like, who I want to work with, who I think are coachable. I like that they come from a sales background, ideally, or somebody that I know knows them. So for example, like we talked about Alan Fisher a little bit earlier, like if Alan Fisher said, Greg, you have to talk to this person, they're amazing. Those are the type of people I usually hire. Usually they're not people completely cold that I've never talked to. I usually am able to get a lot of background on them.
Yeah. Okay. So that is interesting. I'd love to delve into that. Before we do, so you said, obviously, the focus on helping people, and how is that, like, I think most, well, not, let me rephrase that, because I know there's good, there's amazing human beings, and then there's bad actors in our industry, same as any industry.
Yeah, perfectly
but
said.
Most of the recruiters that I associate with are like-minded with you, right? Like they're money motivated, and they're also focused on helping people, having a positive impact on people's lives and making a difference in the world. So, but how does that factor in, like, on a day-to-day basis, like in your thought process, in your decision-making? Is there a, key question that you ask yourself, or a value system that you and your team members align yourselves with? Like, how do you ensure that that is a consistent thread that links everything that you guys do?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think hiring people that we know and can trust and we know are ethical.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. I mean, I'll give you an example. The last recruiter I hired, I've known her for years, and I know a million people that know her. I know her last two bosses. So to bring her in is pretty safe, because I know that she's just going to do the right thing. So I would say that's really the big thing. And I always tell my team, I said, if you have to think about if something's ethical or not, then it's not ethical.
And like, right.
So I say, yeah, if you have to ask me, and then that means it's in the gray. And if it's in the gray, I think that you err on the side of being honest and being ethical. So that's who I've really focused on hiring. And to me, you know, I hire character first and skill second, right or wrong. Some people might disagree, but
no, 100%.
I'd rather teach somebody who I like, who I know is going to do the right thing, that's going to represent our brand well, than to hire a top performer that's just going to make us look bad and put a bad rep on our industry.
Yeah, and not only that, but also disrupt your team as well. You know, someone like that who's, you know, yeah. So I'd love to delve into this, Greg, because so how many people have you got in the team right now?
So we have seven.
So seven, is that including you or?
That's including me, correct.
All right. And then of those, how many are fee earners and how many are sort of support staff?
So everybody, I do all the selling. Five of them only recruit. And then one of them who starts next week will be more like a COO.
Okay.
So he's he's going to be taking off a lot of the things, like dealing with clients and new business development and helping with the operations and the financials and adding more processes. Yeah, right now, also for your listeners, I mean, I've always done everything. And Alan Fish and I talked about this too. I mean, it is everything. I mean, it is selling, it is closing deals, it's recruiting, it's hiring, training, managing, it's doing the accounting. I mean, we have a firm that does it, but I work with them. Right now we're redesigning the website. So it's all of that. And I, like you said, it's a road to burnout. So for those that are listening, I would say hire somebody, even if you have to make a little bit less money, because I just think it's the best thing to do. Otherwise, you're just going to be working all the time, which I'm completely guilty of. It's why I'm hiring this gentleman on starting Tuesday.
Okay, this is getting really interesting, Greg, because there's a few things I want to follow up on there. One is hiring a COO, sort of ops person, which I've done, which I know Alan Fisher has done. And so I definitely want to talk about that, because I don't think we're promoting that to our coaching clients, that if you want to scale, you know, and you're not, well, look, I won't get too much into it because I want to park that for a second. And we'll circle back to it. Before that, I wanted to talk about your hiring strategy, because this, ironically, is the challenge that recruiting firm owners tell me is one of their biggest challenges if they want to grow, is I can't find good people, or I hire someone and they don't work out and it just wastes time and money. I could have just, you know, made more placements. You know, it's set me back rather than taking me forward. And your philosophy is really interesting, where who do we already know, or who do I already know, that they might not even have recruiting experience, but I know their character, I know their work ethic, I know their values, and you know, that's the sort of person I want to work with. And or you maybe don't know them personally, but you know someone who knows them, and you've got that reference, then that's such a strong, you know, of course, it doesn't guarantee everyone's going to work out, right? But it takes them, you know, often if you're recruiting someone and they don't know you, you don't know them, and you just go through an interview process, it's a bit like dating, isn't it? Like you only get part of the picture. You never know until someone really starts, you know, you don't, like, until you move in with someone.
That's right.
You don't really know, right, if you're compatible and if this thing is going to work out. And because, of course, in an interview, people are, you know, they're presenting their best side of themselves. And, you know, so I think that's smart. And I just wonder if our listeners are doing that. It sounds obvious when you say it, but you know, often sometimes the obvious gets overlooked. So
I agree with you. Yeah, there's some people, I call them professional interviewers, and they can go in there. There's one in particular I'm thinking of who will go in and he'll blow everybody's socks off. And he is well-dressed. He is in great shape. He looks like a movie star. He does all the right things. He knows how to overcome objections. He is just one, maybe the best interview I've ever seen, but he doesn't deliver. And that's why I think having these backdoor references are so important. So, you know, one of one of my recruiters who's a really, really incredible, you know, she worked with my wife. She worked for one of my friends. I shared an office with her for a brief period of time because we split office when I first started. So I know so much about her. So the chances, to your point, of her not working out, of course, anything's possible, but the chances when I hired her were so slim because I knew I had so much background on her. So that's not to say I wouldn't hire somebody that I didn't know, but I think it's less risky if you can either know them or you know people well that know them.
Totally. And I suppose, like, if you're hiring someone who's not recruited before, there's no guarantee they're going to like this because it's not for everybody, right? So I guess that's the risk is, are they right for your business and you would feel happy putting them in front of your customers, but are they going to work out long-term? I guess you never really know that, but at least you know they're not going to damage your reputation. They're not going to undermine you. Most likely they're still going to pay for themselves, even if, you know, they're not a long-term hire, then you, it's not going to have set you back.
Exactly. I mean, and I actually had one last year and I hired her and I think she was still trying to figure out what she wanted to do. And we talked about recruiting. I don't think it was ever in her mind. She was recommended to me. I knew her former boss who had really great things to say. And she was really good and really, really smart. And then she decided she wanted to go to law school. So I had her for 6 months and she left. And it's tough because, especially as a small business owner, I have to be the one that trains her from scratch. And then she was finally getting the hang of things really well. And then she left. So the reverse can happen too. Like you said, sometimes they don't know what they want. Sometimes they go into it and say, you know what, I don't love recruiting. And I think a lot of them, at least from my perspective, I don't think they realize how similar it is to sales. A lot of people that I talk to who want to get into recruiting say, I love HR. And I'm like, no, it's not HR. It's not HR.
Right.
Yeah. I love to help people. And I'm like, well, you do get to help people, but this is a tough job. This is not just like talking to your friends all day. And I think that's the misconception sometimes of people who don't want to get into recruiting. So I always have to emphasize that, where you're going to be on the phone a lot. You have to talk to people. People are going to ghost you. You're going to have a great candidate who rescinds on the offer. Like you have to be ready for that.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because one of our clients, the way that he, part of his interview process is, I think the second interview, he'll get the candidate to sit beside him and he'll sit there and make cold calls and, you know, let them listen and watch the process. And then ask them this is what the job is, does this look like something that you would be happy to do? And at that's a pretty, in that they're either like, yeah, absolutely, that I'm up for that. Or, oh, wasn't expecting that. I didn't know that was required. And so maybe this isn't for me, but he finds out before they start. We have another client, Paul Warner, who's actually been on the podcast before. So shout out to Paul. And what he does is he takes it one step further. So he actually gives the candidate, this is an internal hire, right? He gives them his phone. He gives them a script and he gives them a prospect list and he says, okay, go for it. And, which is pretty brutal. I don't know.
Yeah,
like how most people would probably faint if you asked them to do that. But it's worked really well for him. Like he hired a guy, Jesse, who had no recruiting experience, but he had been an appointment setter. He'd been a high volume outbound salesperson, but no recruiting experience. And he gave him that task. And Jesse set, I think, 4 or 5 appointments during his interview, which led to business. So he kind of had to hire him then because the guy won business before he even started.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. And now there's so many, we have a client who actually makes people set appointments during their interview. So they do the same thing. They're like, here's a script, here's some prospects, call them. If you set 3 appointments, we'll move you to the next round. Not, we'll give you an offer, you move to the next round. And There's nothing wrong with it. It's completely perspective, a little intense for me, but
it is intense. And actually, I would change one thing. I don't really even care if they get any appointments or not, because a lot of that's luck. Like, we know.
Absolutely.
You could make 50 calls and not actually speak to anyone, right? Depends on, you know, so, and I think it's unfair to say you have to set 3 appointments because they don't know your industry. They don't know your business. They don't, you know, but what you're really testing there is courage, you know, self-motivation. Are they willing to do something hard and scary? Are they just have that attitude where they're up for trying stuff? And even if they don't know what they're doing, they're willing to try. And I think that is more what you're measuring. And then you're also getting to hear how they come across on the phone and how they present themselves, how they articulate themselves. So I don't even really think it matters if they get any appointments. It's more the you're hearing them and you're seeing their attitude. That's the main thing.
I completely agree with you. And having worked with a bunch of salespeople, because my last company did appointment setting, it's also interesting to see, hence the name of your podcast, you know, the resiliency. I mean, there's some people that get hung up on and they go and they tell everybody in the area and, oh my gosh, this person was so rude and this and there was one salesperson in particular where he'd like laugh about it and he'd just go on to the next. And you want to see the latter of somebody that says, nah, you know, it's going to happen and on to the next, not somebody that's going to have to take a 20-minute break every time something goes wrong.
That's hilarious. I actually used to, teach, like I had a whole course on cold calling and, you know, opening call, getting past gatekeepers back in the day when that was like a thing, you know, opening calls effectively, asking good questions, overcoming objections and so on. But a huge part of it is mindset. And we used to I used to teach different techniques for making it more fun and just not taking stuff personally. And so one of those techniques I called the Fonz technique, which if you're old enough, you remember the Fonz from Happy Days. And he would go, hey, like nothing could bother the Fonz, right? He was too cool. And so the idea was someone hangs up on you, someone's rude to you, you say, have a great day, thanks for your time, hang up, hey, no problem, and make the next call. So
exactly. Yeah, I know. We try to have fun with it. But the other thing I was going to tell you I do during interviews is I have them shadow, to your point, all the recruiters. So I have them speak to multiple recruiters. And one of the things I tell them, not only to shadow, so they can make sure they like the job, but I always tell my recruiters, I said, what you tell them stays between you and them. I said, I will never ask you. I don't want to hear it. I said, the only thing I'm going to ask you is if you recommend that we hire them. That's the only question I'm going to ask. And if you think, I always say this, I go, I have my little speech. I always say, if you think I'm the worst boss ever, I said, tell them I'm the worst boss ever. I said, I don't want to mislead people. I want you to tell them the challenges of the job. I want you to tell them the good parts. I said, same thing with the company. So I don't ask my recruiters to spill the beans and say, what did you talk about? I specifically tell them, I don't want to hear it. Like you just tell me thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you like them? Should I bring them on or not?
Okay. I like that. That's interesting. I love the idea of having them meet multiple people in the business because they get different perspectives on what the job is like, what the company's like, what the culture is like. And you also then you get feedback and different opinions from people who you trust and you value. And who know you and know the business, do you think this person is right for us? So I think, that's a brilliant strategy. Greg, I can't help notice that your growth, like if you look at 60 people in 6 years mm-hmm. versus 6 people in 6 years, your growth is a lot slower this time around. And I'm wondering what your, I'm assuming that's intentional. Like what's your strategy here?
Well, you know, my current company, we only do recruiting. So the other company did multiple things. My goal has never been to build like an empire. It's never been to, hey, I want to build a 100-person plus recruiting company. It's just, I want a nice lifestyle business. Relationships are really important to me. I want to get to know my team. We have like personal like relationships, right? I mean, one of my recruiters posted recently on LinkedIn and she goes, all my one-on-ones every week start with what am I doing this weekend? You know, ask me about my family. And I love that. I love having that relationship with my employees. So that's been really the goal is to be able to have a nice lean company. We're seeing a lot of companies lay off because I think they overspent. I mean, we don't. We keep our team pretty small. It's also the quality control. I mean, now that the size of the company is really easy to control quality right now, I can look at resumes before they're submitted. I can help the recruiters. So that's why I do what I do. I mean, the goal, like I said, it's never been to scale the company to 60 plus employees. That's not my goal. If it happens, it happens. But that's not a big goal for me at all.
I understand. And let's then talk about the operations COO role, because it's so funny that I wasn't expecting this conversation to go this way today.
Sure.
But right now in our coaching community, we have, I think, 3 people who are hiring or have recently hired an operations manager, director, COO, whatever level, but it's that type of person. And so I'd love to hear what your thought process is, why you feel that's going to benefit you rather than just continue to try and do all those things yourself.
That's a great question. I've been doing it by myself for 12 years, and I've never really had help, and it's been exhausting. I mean, it's been an amazing ride, but it's been exhausting. And I like to have my recruiters focused on recruiting. I mean, that's what keeps the lights on, and not worrying about doing side projects and onboarding employees and dealing with maybe a tough client, which I know is going to wear them down a little bit. So that's why I decided to hire somebody in operations, is that I have my recruiters recruiting, I'm doing everything else, and to do everything else is just, it's a lot. And I just need a helping hand. Yeah, my sister, who's also in recruiting, she was asking me, and she goes, and she works for about a 125 person recruiting company, but she goes, do you have sourcers? No. Do you have an account manager? That's me. Who helps your recruiter sourcing? I do the sourcing for them. I help them with it. And she goes, okay. She goes, who does your account management? Well, I do. Who deals with their clients? I do. Who does the sales? I do. What about your accounting? Me. That's me. Who's organizing your website? I know you're doing a new website. Oh, I'm dealing with that. And my sister's like, Greg, we have like a whole team that does the job of you. And she's like, and she goes, are you recruiting too? And I go, yeah, I'm also recruiting. And she's like, she goes, it's too much. She goes, you need help. So, and we have a,
she has got a point.
She has a very valid point. So
what's your sister's name?
Marnie.
So shout out to Marnie.
Yeah.
Good advice for Craig.
Very good advice. Yeah. Very good advice. So that's what made me, we used a business coach to help my team. So we're all very comfortable with him. We've worked with him for years. And then finally we just made it happen. And then the other thing that I was really focused on is I wanted to hire somebody who was experienced. I mean, our team is, most of them have, 5 to 10 years of experience. And I wanted somebody who can have those executive conversations. So the gentleman that we hired has been around for, he's in his early 60s right now. So being able to have those executive conversations and helping the team and having experience to me was really, really important.
Amazing. Yeah, I have only latterly... How old are you, Greg, if you don't mind?
Sure, 44.
44. Okay, so you're still young. I'm 50.
much older.
And I actually tried to do everything myself for so long, and it really hampered my growth, my development, and also my just fulfillment of what I do, and led to like just a lot of frustration. And things really turned around for me when I started growing a team, especially with my first. So actually hire number two. So hire number one was Rachel. Hire number two was Leanne. And Leanne came on as the COO. And that was a revelation, because all the things that I'm crap at, that, I just kind of forced myself to do, or I muddled through, took time away from me focusing on the things that I'm great at, right? So, it's like night and day. It's such a huge change. And there's a book that we recommend. It's called Traction.
Oh yeah,
do you know that one?
Yes, absolutely.
That we really got a lot out of that in terms of understanding that. Often there's two leaders in the business. You've got the visionary, who's like the usually the founder, you know, has the big ideas, often is like the lead salesperson or good at dealing with major accounts or key partners or whatever, but they don't always have the follow through, the attention to detail, the kind of completion of tasks. They like start things and then don't finish them, then start something else. And they're always changing and telling the team, oh, we're going to do this today. And then the next week it's like, oh, we're going this direction. And then the integrator is in the language of this book is the person who actually is able to deliver, to drive projects, to effect change, to see things through. And they both have strategic, you know, they're both able to operate strategically, but they just complement each other. And so that's definitely what we've created here at Recruitment Coach.
That's amazing. Yeah. And Alan Fisher and I were talking about the same thing. And he has somebody who is his right person who he just swears by. I've talked to her. She's amazing. And yeah, it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference. Even we were talking recently and even, you know, I was looking at our accounts and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going out getting new business and it's hard to find new business. And then we have all these accounts over that we've accumulated over the years. And I'm thinking, how hard am I hitting those? Well, not that hard because I just don't have the time. I mean, I'm doing a mediocre job. I don't think I'm doing as good of a job. I could be looking at their websites and being and saying, I see you have these five positions open. Can we recruit for it? I just did it with one company. They gave us five positions. And that was just with one, right? And so I'm like, oh my gosh, if I did this with a bunch of them, I could probably get a lot more. And you know, stuff like that, I just don't have the time for. I mean, I can't work any more hours unless I just, you know, never sleep.
Yeah, exactly. You've been there and done that.
Yeah, so. I'm still doing it. Unfortunately, that's why I hired somebody.
Good call. Good call. Hey, you mentioned the idea of it is a decision. Make less money in the short term, but also enjoy your job more and have more freedom and time, right? Because and that's definitely been my decision. Like we're growing our team. So there's three of us in the UK and there's four of us in the Philippines right now. We're just about to hire another person. We're looking for a full-time videographer basically. So that'll be four of us here in the UK. Obviously, you know, every time I hire a new person that reduces our profits in the short term. I mean, that's an investment, right? So you'll get a return eventually, but in the short term, it means that instead of giving myself a raise, paying myself more at the end of the month, I'm giving that money to somebody else, which I think a lot of business owners who have never scaled, they just don't understand that. They're like, but why would I hire all these people? I can just keep that money, right? But the way I think of it is I am buying my time back. So I just, Greg, took a two-week vacation recently for the first time in 20 years and completely switched off. I've never been able to do that before.
I've never done it. And I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's why.
Not yet.
Exactly. Not yet.
Exactly. So I personally would rather, I believe the money is going to come, right? And but in the short term, I'd rather earn a little less and create freedom, because why be an entrepreneur if you have no freedom and you're actually working twice as hard as when you're an employee? That doesn't really make sense.
Exactly. I mean, if I made $100 million a year and I don't get to enjoy it, then what's the point of making $100 million a year? There's zero point. But you made a great point earlier, Mark, and my uncle who mentors me and we're very close, he always says to me, I remember when I first started the business, I said, hiring this person is going to cost me X. And he said to me, he goes, Greg, don't ever say cost. He goes, employees should never cost you anything. He goes, employees are investments. And he said, so if they're costing you something, he said, if it's $100,000 to have them employed at your company and they're not making you any money, then they cost you $100,000. But he goes, but if they make you $50,000, then they didn't cost you anything. So I always try to use that terminology. So even making this decision, I'm thinking, you know, it's an investment and, you know, it's, and I think the return on investment is going to be good. I think in the long term, financially, it's going to be good. And even if I make the same or a little bit less, if I can free up 10 hours a week to be able to whatever, I mean, it could be sleep or watch TV or just relax a little bit more, then it's an amazing investment, in my opinion. And I wish I would have done it sooner. I had the mentality that you described for a very long time. And it was just like, why should I hire somebody when I could just keep it? I can do this job. It's not hard for me. I've done it for over a decade. But things just add up and add up and add up. And then you're just working all the time.
Exactly. And so that's a good point, because I used an example where there's a lot of things I'm not good at and I wanted somebody else to come in who's strong at that. But actually, maybe people are like you and they're like, yeah, but I'm good at that. I can do all that stuff. But just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should be the one who's doing it, right?
That's right. And it took me a while to feel that way. Exactly. I mean, you know, as a business owner, in my opinion, usually you're probably going to be the best at most things, because that's why you're the business owner and the employees are the employees, usually, not always. But you can't, in my opinion, you can't have that mentality. You have to say, hey, I'm going to have to offload some of these things. And maybe I do it on a scale of 1 to 10 of 10, and maybe they do it an 8. But otherwise, I'm going to be chained to my desk the rest of my life. And you don't want that either. And, you know, and we have very capable employees that can do a really good job. I mean, I think most companies do, or else they wouldn't be there. So I think you need to start offloading some things.
100%. And the thing is, you may be good at all those things. Let's say theoretically, I'm definitely not. Let's say you are good at all those things, but do you enjoy them all equally? Are you is that in the zone where you feel like you're making the biggest impact that you can for your company, for your clients, for your employees? Because, you know, again, like maybe there's things you're good at, but you should still delegate them because you're just not super passionate about those things. But maybe somebody else, the things that you're kind of like, yeah, I can do that and I'm good at it, but it doesn't like light me up. But maybe to somebody else, that's the part that they love, right? And so imagine how the company performs if everybody is doing the thing that they're best at and that they enjoy most.
Exactly. And I think when you're doing what you love, I think you do the best job of it. I mean, there was a definition of sales, which is the transfer of enthusiasm. And I think when you're enthusiastic, that really shows. I think it shows in how you work. I think it shows to your candidates. I think it shows to your clients. So to me, that's really, really important.
Fantastic. Greg, when we spoke previously, you gave a few other examples of transfer, how your sales background has just applied so well to recruiting. Do you have any other examples of that?
Yeah, so I treat every candidate call like a sales call. And one thing, like you said earlier, Mark, where you said, well, some recruiters have bad reputations. I also want to make sure that I don't give recruiters a bad reputation or salespeople a bad reputation, because both have them. It's interesting if you go on Google and you put recruiters are. It's interesting to see the autofill, like dishonest and all this other stuff. That's the last thing that we want to be. So, you know, when I do put on my sales hat, I always am very, very honest with them. And one thing that I always do is I don't just say, you know, this opportunity is rainbows and sunshine and kittens. Like I always try to, and it's not that I say anything negative. I'll give you an example. I might say, you know, Mark, if you're looking for a big corporate company with a rapid advancement, with a clear path, this is probably not the right opportunity. So I do that to build credibility and because it's honest, and that's very, very important to me. So I don't just go with all the goods. I always say, like, here's the goods. Here's some things just to be aware of. It's not the negatives, but just things that might not be a fit for you. So I always do that to build credibility. I always build rapport with people, at least the ones that want to build rapport with me at the beginning. And we could talk about anything. It could be something on their LinkedIn, the fact that I know they like football, they went to a college and I'm familiar with. So usually I use it to build rapport. But yeah, the biggest thing that, that I'll do when I told you this example a little bit earlier is, you know, I had one candidate and he was interviewing with one of our clients and he got a job from Salesforce and he was all excited because our client is this like little company. And I said to him, and he goes, Greg, I'm going to drop out. It was like 2 hours before the interview. So I said, you know, John, if you drop out right now, it doesn't reflect real well on either of us. I said, it's 2 hours before the interview. I said, I understand you have this offer and you're excited, but I'll make a deal with you. If you're open to going to the interview, I said, it's only going to be an hour. And if you don't like it, get in the car, sign the offer with Salesforce. I said, and I promise you that if you reach out to me in the future, I said, I will do whatever I can to help you. I said, I will send you to interviews. If we have open positions, I'll refer you to other recruiters in my network. If there's a company you're trying to get into, I said, is that fair? And he goes, that's fair. So long story short, he ended up going to the interview. He got the job. He ended up liking it more than the sales force. He picked it, and then in 3 years he tripled his income. So, you know, using that language, like, is that fair? Are you, you know, would you be open to it? Sometimes, like, the language I'll use, if, let's say, you seem hesitant to go to an interview, I'll say, Mark, it's a first date, it's not a marriage. And so I'll use, like, kind of that language. I'll say, you know, all I'm asking is, are you open to having an initial 30-minute phone call to learn more? I don't work for the company. I have limited information. And if you don't like it, then drop out. That's completely fine. And I promise you, I'll keep in touch with you in the future. You know, would you be open to that? Is that fair? I'll say that a lot. So that's the type of language that I typically use to try to get people into the interviews. Another thing that people do a lot, which I'm sure you see too, is they'll say, you know, I'm not looking for a job right now. And it's like, well, yes, you are, because you answered my message. <You know? laughs> So I'll also talk to them about that. I might say something like, you know, Mark, completely understand. Sounds like you have a great opportunity. You know, I'm curious how I'm sure you're bombarded by messages. How many messages do you get from recruiters per day? And they say, you know, I get 5. And I'll say, I'm curious, what media respond to this one? And you know, to make your job perfect, what would you need? So it's asking it's really just, you know, when I say salesmanship, it's really just asking questions and listening and then using those answers to try to explain why the position you have might be a good fit for them. And that's to me what it is.
Definitely. And I love the language you're using, which is not pushy. And I think that's the key. Is like, some people who don't understand sales, they think it's about manipulating people or pushing them to do things. And you're asking questions and you're doing it in a very gentle manner. And it's very elegant, because then people can relax. They don't feel like you're trying to push them into something they don't want to do, right? And it is disarming to people when you have that kind of style. And the candidate who says, oh, I'm not looking, which is a classic yes. objection, right? What other questions do you ask that to try and open up the conversation so that, you know, you have a potential to, you know, turn them around on that?
Yeah. So if they say, I'm not looking, I might say, you know, Mark, I'm sure you have a great profile, by the way. I'm sure you're getting bombarded by recruiters. If they don't mind my asking, how many messages do you get a day? And everybody says the same thing. Oh my gosh, I get like 100. So I'm curious, because I know you can't accept everyone. What made you, do you mind if I ask? I'm not asking to pump my ego, by the way. So I'm like very like loose in conversation with them. It says, I'm not asking to pump my ego, but if you don't mind me asking, what made you open to responding to this one? Was there something that you saw that was of interest? And then I listen and they go, oh, well, you know, the salary is a little more. Okay. So in order to make a move, was salary the main driver? No, well, you know, there's a couple other things. And I'm like, you know, is there something at your company to make it better? What would you want to see if you're to make your job even better than it currently is? Like, what ideally are you hoping for in the next opportunity? And then it's just, you know, being able to listen to those responses. And then one thing I always try to do is I always try to pull back too, because I don't want to just be like push. So then I'll say, Mark, by the way, I'm not just asking for this opportunity. It could be in the future, right? So it could be for future roles. It might be a year from now that I reach back out to you. So I'm not just asking exclusively for this opportunity. So I know what to reach out to you if I get something great in a year for from now. And if I do try to, you know, if I do feel like I'm, you know, maybe they might feel like, hey, I don't trust this recruiter or I don't know you, then I always try to pull back. So I'll say, Mark, by the way, there is no pressure. If you want to just tell me no on this opportunity, not like we depart as friends, not a problem. I'd love to keep in touch. So zero pressure. You make the decisions. And I want to make sure that they know I'm not running my own agenda, which I'm not. I'm just trying to educate them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love it.
Yes.
That's good stuff. And I can see why you obviously enjoy training your team members and, you know, working on techniques and strategies and that kind of stuff. So that's awesome. Greg, where's the business going from here?
Well, we have a new COO starting, so that will be really yeah. exciting. But you know, my goal is just to run a lifestyle business. I mean, my goal is to keep this company, I would say probably 15 employees at the most, be able to know everybody. And you know, I have no intentions of selling. So some people like you will ask me, like, is your goal, what's your goal? And is it to scale it? And it's like, no, I'm not looking to cash out this business. It's just to have a nice lifestyle business where I have flexibility, where I can be an entrepreneur and enjoy what I do and do it till I decide to retire, which will probably be never.
Yeah. It's funny. We were watching a show a couple of nights ago about the blue zones in the world, the parts of the world where people live to 100 or more. And like Sardinia is one of those places, Okinawa is another place. So where there's a disproportionate number of people who are 100 years old and they don't retire.
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors. It's like diet and connection and belonging they're not eating excessively and they're very active. But one of those things is they, if they're a farmer or whatever their job is, they just keep doing it. They don't actually ever stop.
I'm the same way. I don't think, I remember I was in my, visiting my wife at her company and one of her coworkers who I knew said to me, the Mega Millions was like $150 million. And she said to me, she goes, Greg, if you won the Mega Millions today, and she goes, what would you do? And my wife says, you would never know the difference. He would come into work the next day like he never won it. And it's true because I love what I do. And I love being an entrepreneur. I love the recruiting industry. Like I said, my goal is to do this business. It's not to cash out. I had a one guy come into me and he's like, Greg, I'll completely fund everything. He goes, you can hire a bunch of people. And I was like, that would be neat, but that's not what I want. I want to run my own show. And what I love about recruiting too is that, if when you do come close to retirement age, is that you can, if you want to, you can be a one person company and you can do occasional placements and you run a very low overhead business. And that's to me, one of the other beauties about recruiting.
Exactly. You could do this forever, pretty much.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Greg, listen, it's been fun. I enjoyed this one. Thank you so much for being on the show and look forward to catching him again.
Yes, Mark. Thank you so much again. Really, really appreciate it.